Blog Talk Radio.
I have this hope as an anchor for my soul. Through every storm, I will hold to with endless love. All my fear is swept away. In everything, I will trust in. There is hope in the promise of the cross. You gave everything to save the world you love. And this hope is an anchor for my soul. Our God will stand unshakable. There is hope in the promise of the cross. You gave everything to save the world you love. And this hope is an anchor for my soul. Our God will stand unshakable.
The notion of conspiracy in such monumental proportion, it eclipses in its all-encompassing shadow all other mind-blowing, universe-altering revelation as far as effectual truth and what they mean for world. Having studied astronomy as my science in college, I believe myself to have had better grasp of heavenly motion than most, and yet my knowledge on the interaction of the Earth with the other objects of our solar and universal system has been diffused in such way that I am left in quandary that makes me unable to entertain other focus. And though I am far from resolving its deeply profound riddle as possibility, it has nevertheless shattered my foundational truth of what I believe to be astronomical mechanics for the motion, formulation, structure, and construct of celestial entities comprising both planetary and star system. Similar to the day after I awoke to the conspiracy of 9/11 and government-sponsored terror, I am now in need of a model which would sufficiently replace in explanation my observation and imagination of how things daily unfold around me as world. Like my cats, when I move them to new residence, having disrupted all they knew as house and living space since their entrance into the world as kittens, I too am now exploring new boundary and limitation in hopes of making sense of the conundrum of who and where I think I am as self located within world. Welcome, friends. I'm your host, Sin Garcia. This is Fallen Angels TV. And today will be the seventh and final installment of the ongoing series that I've been doing on the release of my latest book, my ninth and newest endeavor, The Flat Earth as Key to Decrypt the Book of Enoch. I appreciate those of you that have taken time to join me on this journey and have given your attention to me and allowing me to entertain all that I've come to learn and come to know about this very strange topic and why it is that the Most High is inserting it into the consciousness of world. Of late is another, intriguing topic to say the least, but it's my opinion that it has everything to do with our being blindsided and being led astray to grand monumental deceptions, not only with the Darwinian evolutionary, we evolved of monkeys, and now, that the reason there's this whole missing link is because the ancient aliens stepped in and they are our forebears and they are our real creators, and that there's no real God, Most High, Yahweh, Yahuwah type God, the father of us all, no grand designer, intelligent design to the creation other than these space aliens or ancient aliens having crossed worlds and being from different star systems, that they came here for whatever speculative reason, and in coming here as part of their journey, that they just happened to either genetically through experimentation or with direct breeding copulation with the pre-Adamic creatures that were then here, that's how we evolved and that's how we came to be. And so many are buying into that. The whole, what I reference as the Darwinian heliocentric worldview, because they are absolutely conjoined, tied together in deception, a misnomer of lies, a web of deceit, so grand and so pervasive that it has turned the world upside down, or at least made it round. And so thank all of you for taking the time to join me. And so this evening I'm going to be focused on covering the latter aspects of the Course on the Heavenly Luminaries, which have to do with the winds, as well as the zodiac, the 12 houses of the zodiac, and how they work together, because the zodiac is a whole another component of the huge time, the construct, the universal heavenly luminary system for maintaining and keeping track of time. And it's fascinating how it also interweaves into the, you know, working together in tangent with the moon and the sun. It's a absolutely fascinating system. And so we'll be covering that this evening as well. And also know that I usually get, you know, it usually only takes me a couple of days to upload the shows that I do over the course of the week, but I am actually taking the time to link and try to make the video meaningful, and the photographs that I use in the body of the overlay for the various radio programs, that this is why it's taken me so long to release all of the different segments of this series, because I am going to try to, especially now that I am done with my ninth book, and even though I'm already working on bringing and translating the Thracian Chronicles, that's my whole next project, and I'm thoroughly excited to be working in that manner on that particular focus. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm working with a couple translators to bring forth the Bulgarian, the Thracian Chronicles, which they were the first, you know, and very old culture predating the Sumerians and the ancient Egyptians by almost 2,000 years. And they were Christians. They knew about Yeshua. They knew that he would come and incarnate into the flesh, and that he would die on the cross, be crucified for the sins of humanity, and that he would even fulfill the Levitical feast days. And so the books that make up the Thracian Chronicles are amazing, just incredibly profound. And I did a whole series here on blogtalkradio.com. I believe it was a 7 or 8 part series on the Book of Atum and Ua, which, you know, is only one of the many texts that make up this huge collection of work. And so, and I also read the first chapter of a book called The Chronicle of Longinus, which he was the Thracian soldier working for the Roman legions that pierced the side of Christ. And when his eye was healed from the blood of Christ dripping into his face, he became a disciple. And also when he was witness to the signs, and the blood red moon, the eclipse, all of those things, the earthquakes which occurred, the signs in the heavens and the earth, which happened when Yeshua was murdered, crucified on the cross, he became a disciple. And so that's another one of the texts. And so I will be working diligently and as quickly as I possible with my two friends on this project to bring those books to the English-speaking world, because, you know, they have not been made available in that manner to the English-speaking world. And so I'm looking forward just to in being able to read them. And so anyways, that's going to be my latest, newest project, but yeah, I'm also going to try to take a break somewhat to catch up on some reading. There, you know, I've been listening to some shows and things like that as I've been just completely focused on completing this book. And it's 398 pages, and so I'm going to do one more thing in connection to it. I'm going to make it available in hard copy, which, in my opinion, the hard copies are just so much more beautiful, and you know, and I think they're worth the extra $10 that it costs, because they will certainly last a lot longer, and I believe that they're just so excellently well done. And I value my books, and I try to, you know, purchase. I try to get hardbacks whenever I have availability. So thank all of you again for joining me. And so we'll go into some of this text. Also, if you have any questions, certainly make them, post them in the chat room, and I will get to them as I can. And also, sometime this evening, I will post the link to two books which I think are very relevant and to this area of study. They were written in the 1800s. Actually, I'll pull them up as we're talking. One is called Earth Not a Globe by Samuel Robotham, who was a scientist, and not only a scientist, but he was also a student of the scripture and a believer in both the Father and the Son. And you can, I've got both of these books in written form, but they are available on the internet, freely available. And so for those of you that, you know, cannot afford to, or that are on a tight budget, you can read them online. They're freely available, and they'll give you an idea of, you know, how they viewed this particular topic, you know, a couple hundred years ago. And they were, you know, in writing about this subject, these two individuals were completely befuddled as to how they were able to, and they meaning the powers that be that were perpetuating the whole Darwinian heliocentric worldview, how they were able to maintain the deception for so long. And so you're welcome, Heavenbound, and Link, and Stephanie, and Allison, and all those, John, and all the numbered guests, and those of you that have access to the chat room, you can look them up. If not, just type Earth Not a Globe, and you can find a copy of it on sacredtext.com, or just type in Terra Firma, TerraFirma, and PDF, and you'll be able to find copies. But anyways, they were, you know, befuddled as to how these individuals are able to perpetuate the deception for so very long. As anybody that does any kind of research into the topic, if you really do give it an honest 2 or 3 days of research, especially now that, you know, we have access to the internet and everything is so easily available to us as far as researching a topic, you get hundreds of links on, you know, that are connected to articles and different things that people have written about this particular viewpoint and this particular debate. And so it's very easy for us to do now, whereas they had to read previously, like in the 1800s, they had to read all the books that were available on the subject. And that's the way I like to do it anyways, but this generation, there's not a lot of people that like to read at all. Which is sad, because in my opinion, that's the only way you can really come to understand, really know about a subject, is by studying about it, reading books about it. Not just articles, or not just watching, 10-15 minute videos, even though certainly now you can put a lot of information in 1 hour, 2 hour long video. But I like to personally read books about it. All right, I'm getting to where I want to be so I can begin this discussion and cover this last aspects of this book on the courses of the heavenly luminaries. All right, I believe I've located where I want to be. All right. And I will check the chat room here in a short bit. So if you have questions. I read that part. Okay. We're going to pick it up with Chapter 79. Also, let me go ahead and post a link to the particular translation I'm going to be reading from. This is a Richard Lawrence translation, 1883. And I'll post this into the chat room too. There are two translations, three even. My friend Liz, she sent me another, hello Blue Girl, another translation to this particular text. And there are some variability in the different translations, and I like to actually look at both of them. Hello Dolores and Word Search Greg, and I appreciate all of you. All right, going into it. Chapter 79. In those days, Uriel answered and said to me, Behold, I have showed you all things, O Enoch. In all things have I revealed to you. You see the sun, the moon, and those which conduct the stars of heaven, which cause all their operations, seasons, and arrivals to return. In the days of sinners, the years shall be shortened. Their seed shall be backward in their prolific soil, and everything done on earth shall be subverted and disappear in its season. The rain shall be restrained, and heaven shall stand still. In those days the fruits of the earth shall be late and not flourish in their season, and in their season the fruits of the trees shall be withholden. I cover this particular chapter in chapter 29 of my book, which is, the name of the chapter is The Prophetic Implications of the Book of Enoch, because the last part of the courses on the heavenly luminaries, like many of the biblical texts, speaks about the end of days, the last and final generation, the day of the Lord, all of that. In those days the fruits of the earth shall be late and not flourish in their season, and in their season the fruits of the trees shall be withholden. The moon shall change its laws and not be seen at its proper period. But in those days shall heaven be seen, and barrenness shall take place in the borders of the great chariots in the west. Heaven shall shine more than when illuminated by the orders of light, while many chiefs among the stars of authority shall err, perverting their ways and works. Those shall not appear in their season who commanded them, and all the classes of the stars shall be shut up against sinners. The thoughts of those who dwell on the earth shall transgress within them, and they shall be perverted in all their ways. They shall transgress and think themselves gods, while evil shall be multiplied among them. And punishment shall come upon them, so that all of them shall be destroyed. There's a passage, and I want to pull this up really quick. In Daniel chapter 8 that talks about, and also in Revelation 6 that talks about these stars being cast to the earth, being thrown down, cast to the earth. I want to read this passage too, and then I'll comment on this. Because this is also connected to the calendar being changed. And the calendar being changed changed Sabbath. And it also changed the Levitical feast days. Which after I read this, there's a passage from the Book of Jubilees that I also like to read, because these two passages talk about how the heavenly luminaries and the motions of the sun and the moon, as described in the book on the courses of the heavenly luminaries, how they are directly connected to not only Sabbath, but also with the Levitical feast days, and why it's so important to understand the motions of the sun and the moon so that they can understand, people can understand when Sabbath actually occurs, how to determine it, as well as how that ties into when the, you know, the seven feasts as laid out in Leviticus chapter 23, when those days should be celebrated, when they should be honored. Okay, I pulled up the Jubilees one, so let me read this first, though. It's from Daniel chapter 8. About the little horn. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass, when I saw that I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in a vision, and I was by the river of Ulai. Then I lifted up mine eyes, and I saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And I was considering, behold, and he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth. And touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes, and he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he cast him down to the ground, and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And out of the one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceedingly great, toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground, and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down, and an host was given him against the daily sacrifice, by reason of transgressing, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which speak, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall these sanctuary be cleansed. The next part is about, you know, how Gabriel interprets that particular, which I'm not going to go into that, but anyways, in this particular text, Daniel also speaks about in chapter 7 about how the times and the seasons would be changed. And how everything would become confused so that people like modern Christians and those that are alive today, you know, how we celebrate Easter and celebrate Christmas and all of these Christian holidays, they're tied to pagan festivals, and how Christianity has become an amalgamation of both pagan and the ancient Hebraic faith. And so many have been led astray, not only by the acceptance of the Gregorian calendar, but also in celebrating, which is a form of idolatry, these particular old festivals. And so I'm going to read a passage from the book of Jubilees. This is chapter 6, which talks about the Most High is telling Noah how his seed line, his people, would become confused, that they would accept, not only would they change Sabbath to one particular day of the week, but also that they would become involved in abominations such as the eating of food sacrificed unto idols, and they would no longer worship and celebrate the Levitical feast days as they had been ordained, mandated by the Most High to do so. All right. I'm going to start with verse 17. For those who have never heard this particular passage, never have read it, it's a very important passage in my opinion. Because it, again, ties together the whole premise of why I wrote my latest book, why the flat earth is important, in that it helps one to understand the heavenly luminaries as described by Enoch, the motion of the sun and the moon, as well as how they tie together with the ancient Hebraic calendar system and the determination of Sabbath and the honoring of the Leviticus 23 feast days. It says this: "For this reason it is ordained and written on the heavenly tablets that they should celebrate the Feast of Weeks in this month once a year to renew the covenant every year. And this whole festival was celebrated in heaven from the day of creation till the days of Noah, 26 jubilees and 5 weeks of years. And Noah and his sons observed it for 7 jubilees and 1 week of years, till the day of Noah's death. And from the day of Noah's death, his sons did away with it until the days of Abraham, and they ate blood. But Abraham observed it, and Isaac and Jacob and his children observed it up into thy days. And in thy days, the children of Israel forgot it until ye celebrated it anew on this mountain." Speaking to, you know, Moses. And so all of this was lost. All of this information, which I have written this whole new book about, it was lost until the Torah was delivered to Moses on Mount Sinai. "And do thou command the children of Israel to observe this festival in all their generations for a commandment unto them. One day in the year in this month they shall celebrate the festival. For it is the Feast of Weeks and the Feast of First Fruits. This feast is twofold and of a double nature, according to what is written and engraven concerning it. Celebrate it, for I have written in the book of the first law, in that which I have written for thee, that thou shouldest celebrate it in its season, one day in the year. And I explained it to thee, its sacrifices, that the children of Israel should remember and should celebrate it throughout their generations in this month, one day in every year. And on the new moon of the first month, and of the new moon of the fourth month, and of the new moon of the seventh month, and of the new moon of the tenth month, are the days of remembrance, and the days of the seasons in the four divisions of the year. These are written and ordained as a testimony forever. And Noah ordained them for himself as feasts for the generation forever, so that they have become thereby a memorial unto him. And on the new moon of the first month he was bidden to make for himself an ark, and on that day the earth became dry, and he opened the ark and saw the earth. And on the new moon of the fourth month, the months of the depths of the year of the abyss beneath were closed. And on the new moon of the seventh month, all the mouths of the abysses of the earth were opened, and the waters began to descend into them. And on the new moon of the tenth month, the tops of the mountains were seen, and Noah was glad. And on this account, he ordained them for himself as feasts for a memorial forever. And thus are they ordained. And they placed them on the heavenly tablets. Each had 13 weeks, speaking about the four divisions. 13 weeks from one to another passed their memorial, from the first to the second, and from the second to the third, and from third to the fourth. And all the days of the commandment will be 250 weeks of days, and these will make the entire year complete. Thus it is engraven and ordained on the heavenly tablets. And there is no neglecting this commandment for a single year or from year to year. And command thou the children of Israel that they observe the years, according to this reckoning, 364 days. And these will constitute a complete year, and they will not disturb its time from its days and from its feasts, for everything will fall out in them according to their testimony, and they will not leave out any days nor disturb any feasts. But if they do neglect and do not observe them according to his commandment, then they will disturb all their seasons, and the years will be dislodged from this order. And they will disturb the seasons, and the years will be dislodged, and they will neglect their ordinances. And all the children of Israel will forget, and will not find the path of the years, and will forget the new moons, and seasons, and Sabbaths, and they will go wrong as to all the order of the years. For I know, and from henceforth will I declare it unto thee, and it is not of my own devising, for the book lies written before me, and on the heavenly tablets the division of days is ordained, lest they forget the feasts of the covenant, and walk according to the feasts of the Gentiles, after their error and after their ignorance. For there will be those who will assuredly make observations of the moon, how it disturbs the season and comes in from year to year, 10 days too soon. For this reason, the years will come upon them when they will disturb the order and make an abominable day the day of testimony. Here he's talking about changing the new moons from being, you know, observable by the moon to being Sabbath being one day a week. And make an abominable day the day of testimony, and an unclean day a feast day. And they will confound all the days, the holy with the unclean, and the unclean day with the holy. For they will go wrong as to the months, and Sabbaths, and feasts, and jubilees. For this reason I command and testify to thee, that thou mayest testify to them. For after thy death, thy children will disturb them, so that they will not make the year 364 days only. And for this reason, they will go wrong as to the new moons and seasons and Sabbaths and festivals, and they will eat all kinds of blood with all kinds of flesh. Okay, and so I'm going to post a link to this into the chat room. But you can see how the Most High warns them about changing the calendar, and also how when they did change the calendar, that it would lead to a disruption. All the holy days, all the Levitical feast days, as well as he even warned them that they would change Sabbath from being aligned to the new moon, to new moon and the phases of the moon, and that they would make it one day a week. And, you know, of course, that would throw Sabbath off, so that those that followed that calendar system and those that maintained time with the Gregorian and also the Julian solar calendar, they would be led astray as to the feast days and Sabbath and the new moons. And they would also accept what we, you know, because modern Christians, they, instead of honoring the Levitical feast days, we are, you know, I don't know personally, but most years even celebrate Easter, Christmas, Advent, Lent, all these different what are secular Christian holidays, the new traditional holidays. And they're all based on pagan rites, pagan religions, pagan festival and feast days. Okay, and so that's why, in my opinion, understanding and know about these things is so very important. Deuteronomy. Walk in Truth says, I'm going to have to pull that up. I'll read that here in just a second. The chat room's moving too fast, so let me post this. Good commentary going on in there. Okay, Walking in Truth says this. Observe and hear all these words which I command thee, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee forever, when thou doest that which is good and right in the sight of the Lord thy God. What things soever I command you, observe to do it, thou shalt not add thereto nor diminish from it. All right. I'm going to go back into the book. Into the book of Enoch. But you see how, I mean, that one passage, chapter 6 of Jubilees, in my opinion, everybody should read it, because really it convicts modern Christianity so profoundly, in that, you know, we worship, I mean, celebrate, or most do anyways, Christmas, Easter, and all these paganized holidays, and do not even give any adherence to the Levitical feast days. Most don't even know about them, even though Yeshua fulfilled the first four feasts, and his second coming will fulfill the next three. I mean, you can't get any more important than that. But again, you know, most modern mainstream Christians do not know about them, do not know what they are, nor do they understand how they tie into the life and the ministry of Yeshua. Not only that, but they confirm him as the only begotten of the Father. They absolutely confirm him as Savior Messiah. Because, you know, again, his life, he was the sacrificial lamb, the Passover lamb. He was also entombed on the Feast of Unleavened Bread, was resurrected in time to provide the public sheaf, the grain, the public, the day of first fruits, and then, you know, 50 days after his resurrection, whereas previously, this is when Moses received the law, the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. This is when the Holy Spirit was sent to the apostles and began their outreach, establishing the church. I mean, it is just amazing how prophetic and how directly linked the Levitical feast days are to the life and the first coming as well as the second coming of Yeshua. All right. In my book, I talk about how Matthew 24, Luke 21, and Mark 13, how they connect to the Day of Sinners, as is spoken about in this particular passage in Enoch. And I also talk about how in those three Gospels, it makes mention of the parable of the fig tree. Well, the parable of the fig tree is very important for our generation, because this was the one significant sign that was stated that Yeshua said, I'll actually read it here. When they now shoot, right here. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. And he spake to them a parable. Behold the fig tree and all the trees, when they now shoot forth, ye see and know of your own selves that summer is now nigh at hand. So likewise ye, when ye see these things come to pass, know ye that the kingdom of God is nigh at hand. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away till all that be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore, and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. In Matthew 24, it says there's a specific connection I want to read from that. He says, now learn a parable of the fig tree. When its branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. And so the question is, what is the fig tree and what is the it that, you know, at hand is near, even at the doors? And I explain in my book that there's another account from one of the apostles that is not contained within the canon, the King James Version of the Bible. And it's a testimony, the account of Peter, which you can find this in the Apocalypse of Peter. But Peter asked Yeshua, the only begotten, the Son, what the fig tree is, to explain it to them, because they did not understand. They didn't know what it was. So, and this is the only version that gives the answer as to what the fig tree is, so that, you know, those that read these Gospels can understand. And so I'm going to read this real quick, and then I'll move on into the other two portions that I want to cover, the zodiac and the winds, from this particular text. But this is important and it's relevant, especially for our generation. It says this, and ye, take ye the likeness thereof, learn a parable from the fig tree. So soon as the shoot thereof is come forth and the twigs grown, the end of the world shall come. And so in this version, the Apocalypse of Peter, Yeshua ties together the parable of the fig tree with the end of the world, saying that when you see it come forth and twigs grown, the end of the world shall come. And so Peter asks, not understanding what the parable of the fig tree is, and Peter answered and said to him, interpret unto me concerning the fig tree, whereby we shall see it, for throughout all its days doth the fig tree send forth shoots, and every year bringeth forth fruit for its master. What then meaneth the parable of the fig tree? We know it not. You know, understandably, not understanding the parable. Just like those that are alive in this generation, when they read those particular Gospels, if they don't understand what the parable of the fig tree is, they don't understand why it's significant to our generation, nor what the it that is, you know, accompanies with it, you know, how it ties together with our being the final generation. And so the answer is this. And the Master Lord answered and said unto me, understandest thou not that the fig tree is the house of Israel? Even as a man that planteth a fig tree in his garden, and it brought forth no fruit, and he sought the fruit thereof many years, and when he found it not, he said to the keeper of his garden, root up this fig tree, that it make not our ground to be unfruitful. And the gardener say unto God, suffer us to rid it of weeds and dig the ground round about it and water it. If then it bear not fruit, we will straightway remove its root out of the garden and plant another in place of it. Hast thou not understood that the fig tree is the house of Israel? So meaning that the fig tree is a representation of the nation of Israel. This is significant. I'll explain why. But first let me read the rest of it. Verily I say unto thee, when the twigs thereof have sprouted forth in the last days, here again, the connection of the fig tree with the last days, our final generation, the end of the world, then shall feign Christ come and awake expectation, saying, I am the Christ that am now come into the world. And when they, Israel, shall perceive the wickedness of their deeds, they shall turn away from after them and deny him whom our fathers did praise, even the first Christ whom they crucified, and therein sinned a great sin. But this deceiver is not the Christ, and when they reject him, he shall slay with the sword, and there shall be many martyrs. Then shall the twigs of the fig tree that is the house of Israel shoot forth. Many shall become martyrs at his hand. Enoch and Elijah be sent to teach them that this is the deceiver which must come into the world and do signs and wonders to deceive. And therefore shall they that die by his hand be martyrs, and shall be reckoned among the good and righteous martyrs who have pleased God in their life. All right, so the full answer that Yeshua provides to Peter in regards to the fig tree, he tells them that the fig tree is the nation of Israel, and that when you see the nation of Israel bloom and its shoots come forth, meaning that it is reestablished as a nation, which occurred during our lifetime. In May 14th, 1948, Israel was brought into being again as a nation. This is the blooming of the fig tree. And in the rest of it, he tells us that the blooming of the fig tree, the recreation of the nation of Israel, that this sign would accompany the last days, that we would be the final generation to be alive during this time, and that all things would be fulfilled. He also tells us that the Antichrist would come forth and be revealed before his return, and also that the two witnesses, Enoch and Elijah, they would come forth in the end of days to convict the Antichrist, to basically tell to the world that he is not the Christ, that he is the Antichrist, and that, you know, because his reign, his coming to power with the New World Order would accompany all lying signs and wonders. And those that do not understand what the fig tree is and how it connects to the end of days, or that are not Christians and do not study the scriptures, they could be easily led astray, easily deceived, into accepting a strong delusion because they have no love of the truth. And so all these things are tied together with the last chapters of the book of Enoch, as well as the gospel. And how all of this is relevant is that, and I explained all this in a show that I did on the parable of the fig tree, which I uploaded it. You can find it on my YouTube channel under Endeavor Freedom. But how it's significant is that it says in Psalms 90, "For all our days are passed away in thy wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. The days of our years are 70 years. If by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off and we fly away." Psalms 90, verse 9 and 10. So that tells us that a generation is 70 years, which if you add when the United Nations declared that Israel should be recreated as a nation, that commandment went out in November 29th of 1947. You add 70 years to that, it brings us to 2017. Now, again, I told you about how Yeshua's first coming fulfilled the first four of the Levitical feasts. His next coming would fulfill the next three. And that everybody that understands Scripture and understands these connections, they're looking for his coming, his return, to happen and to be in connection with the feast of trumpets. And the reason being is because this is the first of the three fall feasts that remains to be fulfilled. And so, and I cover all of this again in my book, but the reason I mention this here, and I'm going to cover it very quick because I want to save time to get into the other two things, is in Revelation 12, verse 1 and 2, it says this: "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered." Well, this particular sign is very important, because it links up to a celestial alignment, a celestial phenomena, which will occur on the Feast of Trumpets in 2017. Now, those of you that have not watched Daniel's timeline, I do recommend that you watch it in full, because 2017 signifies not only the occurrence of this particular event, according to Stellarium, that program that allows you to look at the sun, the moon, the stars, and their alignment in the past, in the future, but also that it will be the 50th Jubilee. And, you know, that 50 in and of itself is significant. It also is, you know, Pentecost. There's the seven sabbatical weeks from the day of first fruits, where the Israelites celebrated a different harvest, a different harvest crop, each of those 7 weeks. And then on the 50th day, they would have the Feast of Weeks, the Sukkot. I mean, not Sukkot, that's Tabernacles, but Pentecost. I forget what it's called in the Hebrew. But anyways, so Pentecost would be the culmination of those 7 sabbatical weeks. It would be the 50th day. And that was also when the Torah was given to Moses on Mount Sinai, when Israel became a nation dedicated unto God. And so, this particular sign, in my opinion, will accompany the rapture and begin the second coming, and that those not written into the book of life, they, after the protection of the bride, after the wise virgins, after they are protected and go with the groom, then, in my opinion, the wrath of God is poured out on those that are not written into the books of life. And that this is covered, that there will be the great tribulation, the wrath of God being poured out, and then the second, the Day of Atonement, will be fulfilled when Yeshua takes his judgment seat and all are brought before him, every knee shall bow, every tongue confess, and then once the righteous and the wicked are determined, then the righteous will be allowed to enter into New Jerusalem. It will descend, and then the millennial reign will begin. And so that, you know, again, ties in all of what I've been talking about into the culmination of the Book of Enoch. All right, I'm going to go into the winds. Let me get to that real quick. Because it's also important that I explain to you how the zodiac ties into this as well. And then I'll check the chat room. Shouldn't take me but maybe 10 minutes to go through this. I'm getting to it. All right. All right, here we go. Now, this is interesting as well, the winds of heaven. Chapter 27 from my book, The Winds of Heaven, which this is chapter 75 from the Book of Enoch. It says this: "And at the extremities of the earth I beheld 12 gates open for all the winds, from which they proceed and blow over the earth. 3 of them are open in the front of heaven, 3 in the west, 3 on the right side of heaven, and 3 on the left. The first 3 are those which are towards the east, 3 are towards the north, 3 behind those which are upon the left, towards the south, and 3 on the west." All right, and here's my explanation of the 12 winds. Which also, think about the book of Revelations, where it speaks about the angels standing on the 4 corners of the earth and how they hold back the winds at the end of days. Because it's my opinion that what Enoch is talking about in the description that he gives for these 4 sets of 3 winds is in relation to their placement on the flat earth map again. And that every aspect of the Book of Enoch, the courses on the heavenly luminaries, they reference and are connected to this particular map, and the placement of them can be discovered according to this map. All right, here's what I wrote in my book. "Wind is generated by atmospheric disparities in pressure. Whenever such distinction exists, air flows from higher to lower pressure areas, channeling the movement of wind of various speed. Enoch cites the disruption of the winds among 12 gates as 4 sets of 3 equally divided by the cardinal directions. Each of these subsets interact differently with the earth's topography, depending upon the temperatures of those regions, as well as the type and variety of land water that they are situated over. These factors together affect how clouds are distributed, creating the weather patterns which funnel winds, formulating storm activity. Another portion of chapter 75, verse 3. From four of them proceed winds of blessing and of health, and from eight proceed winds of punishment, when they are sent to destroy the earth and the heaven above it, all of its inhabitants and all which are in the waters or on dry land. Here's my answer. Dispersed over both land and water, two-thirds of the winds are cited as being destructive to the earth, while only one-third are considered beneficent in nature. And because the other descriptions of the motions of the sun, moon, and stars are relative to the azimuthal equidistant projection map, I see no reason to deviate from its use when trying to figure out the placement of these four sets of winds. I believe the detail associated to their characteristics also provides us clues as to where they should be allocated. All right, I'm going to just, because I'm running out of time, I'm going to read one description of one set, then I'm going to explain how to figure out their placement. It says this. The first of these winds proceeds from the gate termed the Eastern. Through the first gate on the east, which inclines southwards from this, goes forth destruction, drought, heat, and perdition. From the second gate, the middle one, proceeds equity. There issue from its rain, fruitfulness, health, dew, and from the third gate, northwards proceed cold and drought. You'll find each one of these winds speaks about, gives the characteristics and the descriptions of each one of these winds. And so let me get to my answer. All right. Though we have no way of knowing in which manner the continents were situated during the time that Enoch was given the vision of how the winds were situated over the circle of the earth, I believe that the four above passages were included as clues. There's four passages. I didn't read those, but they talk about how the south wind is connected to paradise, the north wind to Jerusalem, and so I place them according to this. But also, the characteristics. Having studied this portion of the text, it is my opinion that what Enoch cites as being description for the four sets of these three winds, as laid out by the four cardinal directions, construe their specific placement on the plane of the earth. Studying his narration of these winds while looking at this azimuthal equidistant projection map, I've come to the conclusion that the characterizations of each different set can help one deduce their alignment and distinguish their distribution upon this kind of map. Here's the way that I place them. If one studies carefully the description of each of the three winds for each of the four cardinal sets, while looking at this map, it seems to me that what Enoch seems to be asserting is that the three northern and three southern winds should be plotted among the southern latitudes from the equator down towards the outer ring of the Antarctic ice wall, while the three western and three eastern winds should be plotted among the northern latitudes from the equator upwards towards the North Pole. All right. You can, reference my book for more detail on this. I'm going to try to get to the zodiac. All right. Because this is important too. And hopefully I'll be able to get to some of your questions. All right, I think I have found it. All Okay, here it is. If I don't find it, I'll just explain it to you. One last thing. Oh, yes, before this chapter, sorry. All right. Okay, here it is. All right, I'm going to read this. It's from chapter 26 of my book, and it's chapter 74 in the Book of Enoch. Beginning with verse 8, it says this. Of heaven, and in the world, that they might rule in the face of the sky and appearing over the earth, become conductors of the days and the nights and the sun, the moon, the stars, and all the ministers of heaven, which make their circuit with all the chariots of heaven. Thus Uriel showed me 12 gates open for the circuit of the chariots of the sun in heaven, from which the rays of the sun shoot forth. From these proceed heat over the earth when they are open in their stated seasons. They are for the winds and the spirits of the dew when in their seasons they are open in heaven at its extremities. 12 gates I beheld in the heaven at the extremities of the earth, through which the sun, moon, and stars and all the works of heaven proceed at their rising and setting. Many windows are also open on the right and on the left. One window at a certain season grows extremely hot, so also there are gates from which the stars go forth as they are commanded and in which they set according to their number. I saw likewise the chariots of heaven running in the world above to those gates in which the stars turn, which never set. One of these is greater than all, which goes round the whole world. All right, here's my explanation of the zodiac. The zodiac divides the 360 degrees of the heavens into 12 distinguishable parts of 30 degrees each, designated by pictorial representation. The 12 signs of the zodiac as a whole formulate the backdrop for the sun's annual coursing, each sign pertaining to a different month of the solar calendar year. And just as the sun's annual progression through the six gates of heaven, as it moves back and forth between the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn, is linked to a specific time of the year, so is the revolution of the constellations, which make up the 12 houses of the zodiac, also linked to a specific time of the year. While the sun moves through these gates, the stars spinning once daily around the fixed star Polaris shift incrementally 1 degree in rotation, causing the sun to move through a progression of its 12 houses. If one were able to see the stars as backdrop during the day after sunrise, in the morning, one would see behind it a particular house of the zodiac corresponding to a specific day and month of the year. And even though most people believe this movement to be caused by the Earth's orbit around the sun, it is the movement of the zodiac around the fixed star Polaris which aligns a specific association of a particular house to a particular time of the year. This is why a particular birth sign is associated to a certain day, month, or season according to which sign the sun was located in when that person was born. The annual movement of the zodiac through the heavens deviates slightly from year to year so that the sun does not, in the following year, return to the exact place where it had begun its movement through the zodiac the year prior, but being offset behind, shifts ever so slightly. To explain that, the zodiac, every year, it shifts barely. So much so that in 2,000 years, the sun will shift through one of the signs of the zodiac, so that it takes it about 26,000 years to go through each one of the 12 houses of the zodiac. And they call this the precession of the equinoxes, which is a greater cycle. This huge cycle is, you know, basically another time-measuring component of the celestial skies. And whereas the sun is connected to a day, and, you know, the moon is connected, its quarterly phase connected to a week, its monthly phase connected to the month, and the 12, you know, you have both the 12 lunar months for the lunar year, and the movement of the sun through the six gates of heaven, back and forth through the six gates of heaven, making up the solar year. The movement of the zodiac is another huge cycle, and that cycle is around 26,000 years. To explain this in a little bit more detail, let me read from this passage from a book called The Witness of the Stars by E.W. Bullinger. He says this: besides these monthly differences between the motion of the sun and that of the stars, there is also an annual difference, for at the end of 12 months, the sun does not come back to exactly the same point in the sign which it commenced the year, but is a little behind it. But this difference, though it occurs every year, is so small that it will take 25,579 years for the sun to complete this vast cycle, which is called the precession of the equinoxes. It takes and it goes through this about 1 degree every 71 years. If the sun came back to the precise point at which it began the year, each sign would correspond always and regularly exactly with a particular month. But owing to the constant regression, the sun, while it goes through the whole 12 signs every year, commences the year in one sign for only 2,131 years. In point of fact, since the creation, the commencement of the year has changed to the extent of nearly three of the signs. Which, explaining this from my book again, thus the sun's movement through the zodiac as a whole demarcates another larger cycle for the measurement and calculation of time past. The modern era of past 6,000 years corresponds to the sun's movement through the signs Aries, Taurus, and Pisces. And while there is no absolute agreement as to when the Piscean age will end and the Aquarian age commence, some speculate that we will soon, if we have not already, arrive to that time. The start of the Aquarian age is predicated to mark the beginning of a new age of enlightenment for humanity, as it is believed that every transition of one era into another is accompanied by vastly meaningful and radical shifts upon the consciousness of humanity. For instance, the commencement of the Piscean Age is associated to the establishment of the Church and Christianity, thus its association to the fish. And so you can see how each cycle of, you know, every 2,131 years that the sun shifts from one particular sign into another is supposed to be commenced with, you know, huge repercussions for humanity. And so some say that the Aquarian Age began on 11/11/11, and that we have entered into what the New Agers call, you know, this New Age of Enlightenment. Whatever it is, it's my opinion that this shift from the Piscean Age to the Aquarian Age is significant and meaningful for humanity. And if it's already occurred, it could, you know, it could be that shift will line up with the millennial reign. Who knows? It could be that it lines up with, you know, the sign of Revelation 12, the woman clothed in the sun with the moon beneath her feet, the child within her womb and a crown of 12 stars, which I didn't explain that to you, but that particular celestial alignment is the constellation Virgo, the sun behind the constellation Virgo, the moon beneath her feet, Jupiter within her womb, which is the star of Bethlehem, which was the sign that signified also the birth of Yeshua, 3 BC, September 11th, 3 BC. And then the crown of 12 stars is the constellation Leo with the planets Mercury, Mars, and Venus all in alignment together. And so, I mean, it's profound. And the fact that it occurs on the Feast of Trumpets, September 23rd, 2017. All of these things, in my opinion, are absolutely amazing. Please do watch Daniel's timeline. It's very significant for our generation. All right, I'm going to see if there were any comments in the chat room which were relevant, and if so, I'll share those. Definitely check out. Oh, I didn't know that. Watcher Ruth says fig trees grow from a shoot, not a seed, and it will blossom. That's a pretty interesting. What's up, Brother Matthew? And so, anyways, I appreciate all of you, and I will be taking, you know, I will try to post the different, you know, as far as this video series, I will actually try to take the time to post meaningful pictures and videos to them, and I will upload them as I get them done. I'm currently working on the show that I did with Rob Skiba. I'm about halfway done. And for those of you that missed it, I did a show with him this past Wednesday as well, which turned out to be really good. And so as I can, I will get to them. Hello, Ran and John and Walk in Truth and all the rest of you that have joined us this year. I appreciate all of you. Thank you very much for joining us, Kahuna. And I hope that you benefited from, you know, all this, the seven series, the seven episode series on the release of my ninth book, The Flat Earth, as key to decrypt the Book of Enoch. Also, I have some books coming in. If you are interested in ordering autographed copies of it, just go to zengarcia.com, click on the contact us, send me an email, and let me know if you're interested in this and any of my other books. Would be glad to give you a bundle discount. And as I said, 398 pages, including all of what I talked about this evening and over this seven-part series. I mean, it's so full of information. I think it will benefit anybody that reads it and blesses your life. thank you all again. I appreciate all of you. I pray that the Most High watch over and keep all of you safe. I'm not sure what that bright object is, Link. If you have a, email me something and I'll check it out and then I'll share commentary on that as I can. All right. God bless all of you. We will speak soon. Be blessed in Yeshua's name.